because he's playing a violin with a banana. But bananas could help you become a better violin player. Eating fruits with potassium and other nutrients help your muscles work better. So bananas can be instrumental after all. Run, throw, think, eat better. Can your food do that? Find out at smallstep.gov.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Anarchy Radio is an editorial collage made up of the voices of guests, callers, and its host, John Zerzan. The opinions expressed are those of the speakers and not necessarily those of KWVA, Eugene, or anyone else. For the last time in 2009, but time enough to squeeze in another War. If you haven't heard, it came out pretty loudly yesterday. Yesterday's New York Times. U.S. is conducting military operations in Yemen, and we know that Yemen terrorism comes from Yemen. And what about Nigeria and Indonesia? As we work through Iraq, Afghanistan, Pakistan maybe next. So it's a good thing we have a Nobel Peace Prize president there. And I find it an interesting coincidence that this guy on the Northwest Airlines flight from Amsterdam to Detroit who tried to blow up the plane, it works right into the loud chorus of terrorists are everywhere, so we need to invade another country, I guess. Kind of a nice coincidence. And before this weekend, last week, the Prime Minister of Lithuania blew the whistle on the U.S. for setting up Soviet-style prisons, secret prisons in Lithuania, no doubt torture prisons. And that's and it reminds me that Obama's General McChrystal, who's in charge of operations in Afghanistan as well as being in charge of NATO, not only a close friend of Cheney and Rumsfeld, but he was in charge of torture earlier in the decade, in charge of all the special ops kind of stuff. So nothing changes in that sense except invading another country. And Saturday was the fifth anniversary of the big tsunami at the end of 2004, which killed 230,000 people. And and I've said this before, but I want to bring it up again. 230,000 domesticated humans died, and who knows how many other non-human species, domesticated species, whereas not a single non-domesticated human or other species died. And I do remember being in Berlin right after that, I think about a week after, and I heard all the leftists grumbling about that. A datum which has been confirmed or verified, and they were all uptight about that. Just like some people are uptight, in a similar vein, I would say, by Avatar, and I haven't seen it yet. I'm hoping people might call in about that. 541-346-0645. It was sold out this weekend. There's a wonderful review I could point you toward if you haven't seen it, or even if you have seen it, by Layla Abdel Rahim. An in-depth review, 5-page review, and you can go to layla.miltsov.org. That's L-A-Y-L-A dot Miltsov, M-I-L-T-S-O-V.org. And she calls it an anarcho-primitivist picture of the history of the world. And it's, I can't wait to see it, because if the biggest blockbuster of the year, the most gigantic Hollywood moneymaker, is, as many people have said, pretty thoroughly anarcho-primitivist, that's quite interesting. Let me get your feedback on that. If anybody's seen it and has a take on that, let me just mention a couple of things that Layla said in terms of the alien thing. I thought this was interesting. She says, the most important point of Avatar is James Cameron's turning of the table on the question of who is alien and what is the definition of alien. The film demonstrates that the alien is not only the one who invades from without. The alien is the one alien to the community of life and thus threatens it with its disregard for its value. The alien is alienated from its own essence when it fails to adapt to life around it. So if anybody wants to chime in about Avatar, which is setting records, apparently. And in terms of what I just brought up about reactions, there was a letter just a couple of days ago, and I responded to it, and they published it almost immediately, within like 2 days or something. And I want to read these, because they kind of rehearse some of these same positions or arguments in a way. And again, this film is kind of stirring this up again. There's a letter a few days ago from Scott Mansky to the Register Guard here, and he's reacting to Roger Ebert's review of Avatar. Thanks for a good belly laugh in reprinting Roger Ebert's review of James Cameron's, by the way, Avatar. I get the, quote, flat-out green message in that the Na'ivi, the native people in the film, live in harmony with nature, and in this and countless other ways they resemble Native Americans, end quote. That's the quote from Ebert. And Mansky goes on to say, pre-Columbian Native Americans near San Francisco Bay left skeletal remains that have been examined by forensic anthropologists. These remains indicate that anyone born into that society, A, had about 1 in 3 chance of making it out of infancy, and B, if you lived to adulthood, you were probably dead by 40 years of age. Similarly, excavations on the Isle of Cyprus, so forth, show that the Chalcolithic villagers of Crete lived to the ripe old age of 35 on average. And his conclusion, in short, science tells us that primitive peoples do not, quote, live in harmony with nature. They live at the mercy of it and die young. Far different matter. And as somebody pointed out, my friend Dan said, with some of these people, you kind of wonder, is maybe that's the only thing they get exercised about. I mean, who knows? But, you know, that's something to ponder. Why are people so defensive or threatened? Anyway, my response, Scott Mansky, defends the techno-industrial nightmare by the use of somewhat misleading references to the longevity of pre-civilized people. He is correct that our ancestors lived shorter lives, but a closer look gives a more precise picture. We know that earlier folks became much less robust with the coming of domestication of plants and animals, also known as agriculture. So if we look, for example, at those who practiced domestication and or were in contact with domesticators and civilizers, shorter lives are indeed in the picture. H. Hilmut, Homo, this is a citation from Homo, a Journal of Comparative Human Biology, 1999, refers to, quote, new calculations of humanoid maximum lifespan potentials and gives a lifespan potential of 70 to 75 years for Homo erectus, the human species, for about 1.5 million years. Mansky denies that we once lived in harmony with nature, asserting that we lived at the mercy of it, which must be why there was no war, no objectification of women, no hierarchy, little work prior to domestication and civilization. Textbook anthropology also cites sharing as the dominant ethos, but apparently some will always give a cynical, defensive sneer to a vastly simpler life world, one that didn't overpopulate or ruin this earth. And no doubt there'll be more, so the film serves the purpose of pushing this this dialogue, coming to grips with. Well, since I didn't see it, I'm not going to go talking about other reviews and stuff, but maybe a little more next week if I get to see it. Had a great time two nights ago. Tim knows what I'm talking about here. Up in Portland at the Muddy Waters Cafe, the Burn Radio Project, the radio blog thing, the webcast there, Bottom Up Radio Network, was really something. I'm just still high from that. And it just was a packed 2 hours, and basically it was a benefit for Franklin Lopez and his End Civ film, which you might be able to figure out is Let's End Civilization. And there was David Rovics there, calls from Ward Churchill, Derek Jensen, Seth Martin, the fantastic musician, was there at the end to play for a while with two other groups, I think. His group is called the Menders. And one of my, maybe the high point for me, was a call from one of the partisans at the Crow Creek, South Dakota, the resistance there, the native resistance. From, her name is Waziyatawin, and she gave a eloquent update, and it was also, by the way, thoroughly anti-civilization. I mean, the whole, and you could, by the way, if you go to catalystcollective.net, catalystconnective.net, you can get the word on what they're doing there, what they're facing. There's also a link to 5 videos, I believe. That was very inspiring, as well as informational. So that was from 6 to 8 Sunday evening. They do that every Sunday. That was Michael and Travis, are the main hosts, and a couple other people helping. And Tim and Micah were up there taping, so yeah. That might become a Picture Eugene thing.
I think we, on this week's video of Anarchy Radio, we'll probably have David Rovick's performance, his last song.
Mm.
I forget the name of the title, but everybody joined in.
Oh, yeah.
Remember that song?
It was after the Somalia Pirates.
But yeah, I think we're going to have David Rovics, and maybe after a couple of weeks of editing or something, we'll have something on Anarchy Radio of that night.
So, oh, good.
Yeah, it was a great night. And it must have been about 150 people packed in there, and people danced who we shut it down, Mike and I, and Fungus, and so we had a great time.
Good. Yeah, it was really something. They couldn't have put more people in there, and raised some money, too, for Franklin. He's a terrific guy. He's trying to pull off this film, as he calls it. It's a no-budget film. I'm working out of his closet, and from B.C. He was down from B.C. Fortunately, he was able to cross the border. That's somewhat iffy, especially, I would think, for him at times. So, and you can look, you can find that, Burn, radio, Portland, anything like that will get it there. And I think they do archive the stuff, don't they?
Yeah, I think they archive them. And I think you go to blogspot.com and then you put in Burn. And then I think you'll track it down, B-U-R-N, Bottom Up Radio Network, and that'll take you to their site. And so that's where you want to go, blogspot.com.
Nice, thanks. Oh, yeah. We might even get a call from up there, I don't know. But that was terrific. They were enthused, and we brought back a lot of juice from that. I think it was a real spur for us down here to be trying to do stuff in Eugene. You know, speaking of the Avatar deal, here's another pop culture thing. A couple of big reviews in the New York Times for two plays. One is the Living Theater production called Red Noir, featuring a largely fresh-faced chorus of 20 or so chanting anarchy, anarchy, reclaiming the Lower East Side with chants of anarchy. Anyway, they didn't hide the anarchy part, this play. And, in fact, who is this? Judith Molina of the Living Theater at 83 is still going strong. And it was written by the poet Anne Waldman, by the way. So, got a good review. And another one is Ragtime. That's, I didn't...
The Doctorow?
Yeah, based on the Doctorow. Exactly. Yeah. And this features modern-day Luddites. So, yeah. I can't hear the sound effects. Rats.
Man.
We're hurting for
not
headphones.
Sound effects. It's our studio audience.
Oh, right. I'm sorry, studio audience. I didn't mean to... Yeah, here's a picture. Well, you want... This is a guy who's... His role as a young anarchist in this Ragtime. So, good anarchist in the theater, as well as the primitivist movie of the year. Well, I'm going to just try to get through some action stuff and announcements and stuff like that. This is one of my favorites. And I think our Christian primitivist friends would agree with this one. And yes, I'm talking about the Pope getting knocked down on Christmas Eve as he walks down the big aisle at St. Peter's Basilica. Woman jumped over the barrier, flattened the old Popester and some other bishop or cardinal walking along with him. And it's the second time in a month that that a big nabob in Italy was decked by something. Of course, Berlusconi got it even worse. Got smacked in the face and messed up. But Benedict the 16th got up and finished off his number on Christmas Eve. Sure, he wasn't even troubled. Anyway, Greece. And you got to give out some awards here. The Action Award in the old world, as we call it, certainly goes to Greece. They win this award every year. It's kind of sad. But in the new world, it's got to be Mexico. With its variety of ALF, ELF action and the big anarchist youth culture and so on, which I've talked about a little bit before. So wear your award proudly. And on Christmas night, in the late hours, three vehicles belonging to the municipality of Stavropoli in Thessaloniki were torched. And what else we got from Greece? Oh, on the 27th, which was Sunday night, a makeshift bomb exploded late Sunday outside the offices of an insurance company in central Athens, damaging the building and nearby cars, but no one was hurt because they phoned in a warning. The episode is the latest in a series of gas canister and bomb attacks by leftist and anarchist groups that have rocked Greece since the police shooting of a teenager last December. The worst riots in decades happened because of that shooting. And there's going to be more. This is guaranteed, in fact, by the socialist minister of labor in the new government in Greece. They're going to crack down. They've got a new austerity program. And he's announcing there'll be bloodshed. He says There's little we can do to prevent that. And he says further, the minister has indicated that such measures, quote, can only be implemented in a violent way. So this is a pretty picture. He's going to screw all these people. They're saying it'll be widespread misery, you know, cutting wages and you know, cracking down on spending and all that. So, yeah, he's announcing what a party it'll be. But the party might be at their expense, of course, in Greece. This is going to be in the next 3 months when they start putting in these draconian belt-tightening measures. Iran is amping it up. On Sunday, there were street battles. People in the streets in Tehran were burning police motorcycles and throwing rocks at them. Widespread fury is one line here. And 10 people were killed. Police were opening up on people as this thing deepens. It's not going away. And here's a funny one. An Iranian official said in Azerbaijan said this referring to Sunday, which was Ashura Day, and what inflamed a lot of people was that it was some kind of religious holiday, and yet the pigs attacked big time and even killed people. This government official says the responsibility for clashes on Ashura Day in Tehran lie on Western countries and anarchists who took every opportunity to disturb public order. According to the Iranian Parliamentary National Security Commission Deputy Chairman, Ismail Kosari, told Trend News over the phone. It's all anarchists that are doing it all. Yeah. I hope so.
Anarchists trying to disrupt things.
Yes. Darn. Well, the Olympic, the refusal of the 2010 Olympic Games in British Columbia continues. In Guelph, Ontario, which is, I guess, kind of an interesting place, a, quote, hotbed, shall we say, the torch, you know, they like to run around with a torch pre-Olympics. There were some protesters. And the torch relay rounded a corner there in Guelph and ran into these protesters. There was a scuffle. The torchbearer and his escort got knocked down, dropping the torch.
Ooh.
Bingo. This was yesterday morning. Yeah. And some, let's see. By the way, there's going to be a benefit on Sunday the 3rd up in Portland. Stolen Land, Stolen Lives, 2010 Olympic Resistance event at Portland State. On Sunday, it's a kind of information thing, including several people, and including, of course, a Canadian representative of the Olympic Resistance Network. Documentaries will be shown. You could go to Portland Indie Media and get the details on that. There's an occupation. This would be almost sort of funny, except it's anything but funny. The Miwok tribe of California, which their land once comprised what is now 10 counties. Well, their tribal property now consists of an acre and a half in Stockton. It's basically a house and a yard, and they were being evicted, so they are occupying this foreclosed house, and that is their whole thing. Yeah, tribal property in Stockton, California. It's a multi-purpose building that the tribe uses, and they're going to defend it. So that's what's left. They got a house, and now they're physically occupying it, but they're trying to roust them out of there. And they're speaking of foreclosures, though. There's more news about people who's they've had their home foreclosed on, and they either wreck the place or steal everything that isn't nailed down, including things that are nailed down, just stripping the place. Nice home. Where's the rest of it? Is a story in the paper the other day about that. So that's people are getting more upset about that and doing something about it. Little ALF stuff from St. Petersburg in Russia. On the 12th of December, a billboard advertising fresh meat was destroyed. And on the 18th, in the same city, windows of a meat factory were smashed and Molotov cocktails were thrown inside. Or a Molotov cocktail was thrown inside. And late last month, by the way, in France, a DOUX, that's a company, their trucks for transporting chickens and other animals was destroyed. A piece of advice, stop supplying KFC. Anti-KFC action. And I don't know where that was in France, actually. It was did not point it out. Bloodlust, a feminist journal against civilization. They're trying to get submissions for number two, Green Anarcho-Feminism, Civilization and Patriarchy. These are some of the topics for those who are interested. And I'm going to pat myself on the back here. When I announced the first issue, a person there told me that some of the submissions for the last issue were the result of you reading our last call. So happy to help out. Bloodlust, beginning work on the second issue, actively looking for submissions. And Using Space, this is another zine, Using Space number 4, I think it is, all about squats all over Europe, is what it sounds like. That's available too. Using Space, I think it'd be easy to find. Let's see, here's something from a wonderful guy, Mark Rudd. Mark Rudd, what it takes to build a movement. Naturally, that's what he's talking about. Yeah, I remember when he was here in 2004, boosting for John Kerry, and he was surprised that people thought that was just a complete absurd fraud. He's still trying to capitalize on his ancient weatherman persona. But it's kind of sad. And he points out, a la Noam Chomsky, that if we got to organize. Forget everything else. Got to organize to build the movement. He says, he talks about all these movements that depended upon lots of organizing. For example, environmental movements have registered enormous social and political gains. Gee, I didn't know that. Gosh, it's been so successful, hasn't it? It's just, yeah, it's unbelievable. You know, what on earth is he talking about? Very important lessons for all activists. I'm Mark Rudd. Mud baloney. And this one, you know, this isn't completely a one-sided thing here, but the Black and Red Cafe up in Portland. Portland gets another little nod here. On January 8th, whatever day of the week that is, they're going to have a benefit for the Institute for Anarchist Studies, or Institute of Anarchist Studies. And what it's all about is they're showing a film called Lucio and this guy is pretty interesting cat. He robbed, the most recent thing he did earlier in this decade, he defrauded the First National Bank of 3 billion pesetas in order to finance radical causes. And then he gave away the money, and then I think he turned himself in. And he only did a few months, which is kind of surprising. He's an anti-fascist. He goes way back. Yes, there's a but here. For an anarchist outfit to, you know, I this guy's cool. I mean, it's great. But what they're boasting about here, which the film conveys, is talking strategy with Che Guevara and Eldridge Cleaver. He was anti-fascist. And I do think, in fact, I did it in the 60s. I was there in California during the Black Panther stuff and supported them against the pigs. We tried to do that. But, you know, Che Guevara, a Stalinist, These are two cases of Marxism-Leninism. If you don't know the difference between anarchy and Marxism-Leninism, then, I mean, I'm sure this guy was interesting, but can you think of something a little more anti-authoritarian? Just a thought. I wouldn't count the Institute for Anarchist Studies as way severely in anarchy anyway, but... And I got this from Don in Wisconsin. Thanks, Don. It's a story about the Bioneers. They're here. They're sincere. They're Bioneers. That kind of tells you kind of all about it, I'm afraid. And we have this guy here, and then we can take a music break. The eternal Bob Doppelt, who has some position here at the university, and at least once a month, if not more often, he has a column in the Eugene paper, Register Guard. And this guy is really something. He talks about, well, he's a climate change guy. He's an environmentalist guy. But even about Copenhagen, he says, the latest column here last Thursday, it's called, At Worst, Climate Summit at Failure. At Best, a Start. It's a start. You know, it's not a fraud. It's not a disaster. It's a start. You know, this guy has to deny so much to, I guess for the sake of being part of the game, you know, he'll say anything. The administration should be credited with planting seeds that, if the stars align, could potentially lead to important long-term action on climate change. Oh, man. And then he has one of the ones just before this is all about trust. The whole issue, the whole crisis is about trust. And gee, I thought it was all about these institutions that are destroying the planet, but no, it's about trust somehow. It's just, you know, how many ways are there to just pump out this bunkum, which of course the guard just loves, just eats it up. And along those lines, before the break here, this is a wonderful letter to the editor by one Rob Spooner from Florence. And he's talking about, this is so great, he's talking about the island, the Pacific Island nation of Tuvalu, one of the ones that's rapidly going under the waves, shall we say. And he says, it's just a thing to make money. They're just doing this to make money. It's a payday. He says, he refers to the nation as drowning, in quotes, as if they aren't actually drowning. And this is killer. He says, this is the heart of it. This is how he thinks, how he knows it's a fraud just to make money. He says, have you seen pictures of the Pacific? Contrary to the name, it is turbulent. There are big waves. So in other words, you can't say that, you know, that the water is rising because there are waves out there. Oh, wow. What a moron. Wow. But this guy, actually, I really think he does less damage than Bob Doppelt putting out his nonsense. You know, a Cretan writing something this dumb, it's just dumb and it's not insidious, whereas this liberal that keeps pumping out this stuff, that does more harm, in my view. I'm sure he thinks he's very wonderful, but anyway. So we're going to have a little music.
Yeah.
I forgot the water. I'm going to go. Can I?
Yeah.
Go get that.
Under the boughs and bough, I'll hold in a snowy shroud. She had no heart so harder, all under the boughs and bough. Feather it fell from skin till threadbare and she grew thin. How were my eyes so blinded? Each feather it fell from skin, and I will hang my gray sky with bitter skin. A rain cloud, rain on me. All out behind the horizon, oh. A gray sky, a bitter skin. And I will hang my head, hang my head low. And I will hang my head, hang my head low. And I will hang my head, hang my head low. And I will hang my head, hang my head low. And I will hang my head, hang my head low. Under the boughs unbowed, I'll hold in a snowy shroud. She had no heart so harder. All under the boughs unbowed.
Anarchy Radio is an editorial collage made up of the voices of guests, callers, and its host, John Zerzan. The opinions expressed are those of the speakers and not necessarily those of KWBA Eugene or anyone else. I have no headphones, and yet I soldier on. Thank you. Thank you very much. Well, here's a little anthropology corner thing. I haven't mentioned this in a while. I've been working on this earliest human ancestors thing, and lo and behold, in the December 18th issue of Science,
this
is, yes, I'm Mr. Science. This is a finding from Israel, Gesher Benat Yaakov, about the way people employed their living spaces, divided or otherwise, and it was felt that, well, the only actual concrete evidence for divided living spaces dates back only to about 100,000 years ago. In other words, people would cook in one place and make stone tools or something in another space, etc. Well, they have found in this hominid site, dating from 800,000 years ago, and they're not exactly sure which species. I think it would have to be Homo erectus. In fact, it says likely a human ancestor such as Homo erectus, that they, in fact, can see by the remains of what's there that they, in fact, organized a living space in that way much, much earlier. Designation of different areas for different activities indicates a conceptualization. That's a form of cognition that thought to be unique to Homo sapiens, but it certainly is not. And then another one I have here in my hands. This is a bit more recent in focus, and thank you, Stephen. There is a... This is written by Peter Solonius, who is a Canadian soil microbiologist. You can find this on the Oil Drum site called Long-Term Agricultural Overshoot. And his point of view is that humans began to overshoot the sustainable limits of the planet when agriculture got underway at around 8,000 BC. And Solonius goes on to advocate a gradual return to hunter-gatherer society, which he argues to be the only sustainable method of human subsistence. Excellent. Sounds like this is nailed down Again, that's on the Oil Drum, the Oil Drum site. And I was glad to get that. And here's a kind of ad of the week. It's a whiskey ad. It says, "Whatever happened to the time we worked with our hands and our hearts?" So there's your primitivist whiskey corporation telling us all about it. Teachers Scotch. Anyway, I didn't really look much for ads, but and I have the current issue of the Jehovah's Witness magazine. There we go, Awake. It's quite anti-tech. The opening editorial talks about addiction, distraction, interruption as perhaps the most recognized problems associated with popular communications and media technology. And another thing I liked about the issue, there's a number of heartfelt statements, testimonies of people who were once messed up, and then they found the Bible, they found Jehovah's Witnesses, Jehovah's Witness orientation, including one, Elizabeth Jane Schofield of the UK, who lived for the weekends, and metal led her astray in a big way. Metal is the devil's workshop, Kevin Tucker. Just thought I'd throw that out. Yeah, there you have it. Led her astray. Okay, 541-687-1833. I guess in the next... Oh, that's my phone number. Not paying attention. There it is up on the wall. Let me read it. I'll read it out. 346-0645. Oh, dear. Just drifting away here in late December.
Is that a metaphor?
Boy. Drifting away? I don't know.
Drifting away in late December.
Something like that. All right. Well, we do know, according to Mark Rudd, that things are getting better and better, the enormous gains of the environmental movement. Meanwhile, the same old of industrial life. There was in the very area where in Prince William Sound, you might remember 20 years ago, the Exxon Valdez, a tugboat spilled some thousands of gallons, 33,000 gallons of diesel fuel, 3-mile-long trail of oil. How could that have happened, I wonder? And speaking of shipwrecks, this was actually last month, but southern Madagascar, off the coast of southern Madagascar, ecological disaster for the area because of the fuel, the phosphates, the diesel, the 8,000 liters of lubricant, etc., all released into the Indian Ocean. In a whale breeding and migratory corridor zone during the migratory season. And here's some news from Africa, some further news from Africa. Zambia and Tanzania are requesting a reclassification for their African elephant populations to enable legal sales of ivory. Let's kill more elephants. But Tanzania, reacting to environmental pressure and small farmers who are objecting to the food shortages, the government has suspended all biofuel investments in the country, as you can use the land for fueling the machine or maybe for people eating. Might be a good idea. In Bolivia, the Maluni Reservoir has receded as Bolivian glaciers are disappearing. This is quite alarming. And some water news here, generally speaking. This is today in the science section of the New York Times. A strange thing that is another product of the fact that the oceans, the carbon dioxide emissions, as that increases and as the oceans become more acidic as they absorb the carbon dioxide and they're getting to the point where they can't absorb, the world's oceans can't absorb any more CO2 emissions. As this happens, as that absorption continues, the noises in the ocean become appreciably louder. It's a strange result of this, from the journal Nature Geoscience. And so it's disrupting mammal species that make sounds that communicate in terms of foraging and so forth. Bad news for them because they won't be able to hear each other. That's a strange thing. But one more result of that. Well, widespread arsenic contamination of groundwater in Bangladesh due to industrial waste. This is also from the journal Nature Science. Some 25 million people exposed to mainly arsenic through this. It's experts have described the situation as the worst mass poisoning of a population in history. Lots of poisoning, lots of cancer due to this arsenic contamination. And in Korea, well, I'm still thinking about last week that that the piece I referred to in not Indonesia but just north of there in Thailand, the industrialization causes, you might recall, I'm a bit haunted by that, people's hair to fall out, the cancer rates are going way up. When it rains, the acid rain burns their skin. I mean, it's just a horror show. Well, South Korea is moving right into that with their a giant, almost $20 billion river project. They're going to remake the country's four largest rivers. And somehow this is controversial, this green development. Unbelievable. Yeah, and it's all apart, as the article says, the country's rapid industrialization. This was New York Times, December 14th. It's hard to even imagine these things, but, you know, you can just pile it up if you want. I'm sure I don't catch all of it. Like Chad, which is one of Africa's major lakes, it was bigger than the area of Israel 50 years ago. 50 years on, it is less than a tenth of its size, and forecasts say it could disappear completely within 20 years. 30 million people are dependent on the lake in various ways, and the disaster is already unfolding. There's a lot of disease as the water disappears, and it probably becomes, the concentration of contaminants, no doubt, is greater when you've got a lot less water. And, you know, I brought this up before. Fortunately, there's more on the subject, if it does any good. The rare earths, earth-friendly elements mined destructively, and that's these things for lithium batteries, all of these things that are supposed to be so green and sustainable, behind the electric cars, the wind turbines. Well, it destroys the land. It destroys the land is a major article from China on Saturday. And of course, that stuff is gone. Then it reminds me of Arundhati Roy and her address, which is going to be called "Leave the Bauxite in the Mountain," and that would be good advice here. Of course, that's not going to happen without a struggle. Yeah, and the price of these rare earths like dysprosium is way expensive because they're using it all up for the wonderful cars and the rest of it. Any news on the phone call? Nope, not a thing. Okay. Oh, you better hurry and call. That's 346-0645. Here's a good one from Zambia. Getting back to Zambia, fish. The fish there. You catch these fish, they have deep ulcerations and tissue decay. They are highly contaminated on the Zambezi River in Zambia. This is a story from Lusaka, Zambia. It's just difficult to read the all these contaminants, these syndromes that are making these fish rot while they're still alive. Oh, I think we have a call. Oh, thanks.
We sure do.
Hello.
Hey, it's Alice.
Hi, Alice.
How you doing?
Oh, good. How are you?
What, I wanted to go back to what you said about the Living Theater.
Mm-hmm.
Because I can't believe they're still around.
That's something? And
I can't believe they're still around. And when I was at the University of Chicago, they came to campus and they put on Paradise Now and Frankenstein.
Mm-hmm.
And then the campus just went up in flames.
Wow.
Just erupted.
What year was that, do you know?
68.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
Anyway, just wanted to mention that.
Oh, that's great. You know, the co-founder with Judith Malina died some time ago, but she's definitely still around, huh? Yeah, that's great that she is.
Just wanted to bring that up.
Thank you.
Take care.
All right, bye-bye. We did get one call.
Yeah.
there's a little story that brings it down to earth a little more, I guess, in terms of what we do on a daily basis. The thing, it brings in the collision between globalization and biodiversity. Verlin Klinkenberg, who writes for the New York Times occasionally, points out that in 1905, there were more than 6,500 distinct varieties of apples in this country. And now, 11 varieties make up more than 90% of all the apples available in the U.S. And he doesn't feel that these have much taste left anyway. But anyway, whatever happened to the biodiversity? Is somebody on the line?
Oh, yes.
Oh, yes, they are? Oh, good. Hello there.
Hi.
Hi.
Just had a quick question, observation.
Mm-hmm.
I noticed that the anarchist primitivist movement is largely a youth movement, and I find that to be kind of alienating, and just wondering if you have any thoughts why that is, why that phenomenon is, and what you think about that.
Yeah, you know, that's a perennial question. Our friend Aragorn in California wonders why that is. There's such a turnover. People get into their 20s and then they kind of start disappearing. It's kind of noticeable. I'm one exception. I'm older than anybody, and I'm part of it. And of course, as you know, I'm sure there are exceptions, but that's a good one. I think it's, I guess it's, you know, it's hard to, there's so many pressures to not stick with it, I guess. I mean, what do you think?
I don't know. I think there's like an age ceiling where people decide they're going to conform and stop creatively thinking.
Yeah, it can be depressing if you think about it. But, you know, there are people. It's not strictly that way. And I think, I noticed up in Portland, for example, that it seemed to me over half of the people who showed up were women. I mean, that's not an age thing, obviously. But there is some. And they also realize that, by the way, they want to have more women behind the microphone as well as out in front. They seem quite young, and I didn't see that in India. Maybe it's more of a Western thing.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about.
That wasn't so much the case. I don't, you know, that's just for whatever reasons. But, and I don't know whose politics were on offer. I mean, I don't, but in terms of people who came and participated, it was definitely not all, by any means, younger folks.
What about other countries that you visited?
Well, Brazil. When I was there about 3 years ago, there was a great big anarchist gathering that they do, I think, every year. Hundreds of kids. They were all young, all vegan, I mean, almost entirely. It was amazing. It was great. It was terrific. I mean, they were really energetic, thinking people, but it was pretty much all young folks. So I don't know.
Okay.
I think it may be especially so here, though. I don't know. Turkey seemed to be a little less. I've been there 4 times, and that seemed to be a little less the case that everybody's like 20. You know, but it's one of those challenges, though, for sure. I mean, I think you're right to bring that up. That's how do we deal with that, or you know, how do we uncover that?
What about Greece, where there seems to be one of the strongest movements?
Oh, you know I was only there once, but it seemed to me the median age was higher there. Yeah, it seemed like some of these real staunch militant anarchists were not 20. You know, they were. I think it was noticeable, and I didn't find out why, but there were people that were certainly sticking with it. You know, who were definitely not in their 20s.
Yeah.
And
thank you.
Yeah, I'd like to find out more about Mexico because, you know, so much good stuff is going on there. I wonder how many of them are kids and not, you know.
Okay. That's about all I had for you.
Okay. Thanks for calling. Oh, and we got to say bye-bye. I think Carl's given me the ixnay. Thanks for listening. See you next week. We're going to get the January schedule all figured out pretty soon. Oh, could I say one more thing?
One more thing.
Going to Madrid and England in the middle of the month, but I'm not going to miss a show. We'll miss a show at the very beginning of February, but we don't need to worry about that now. See you later.
When homes are blown away, power lines knocked down, and food and water are scarce, Red Cross volunteers bring back hope. And hope is more powerful than any disaster. So please give what you can to help the victims of the recent hurricanes and thousands of other disasters across the country each year. Call 1-800-RED-CROSS or visit redcross.org.
Brought to you by the Ad Council.
You've heard of the 80s, but have you heard everything from the 80s? There's a lot of great obscure 80s music out there, and I'm bringing it all to you on the Latent 80s Show, Sundays from 8 to 10 p.m. on KWVA Eugene. My name is John, and I'll be playing punk, post-punk, college rock, indie, new wave, and dance classics from the 80s or pretty close to it. That's Latent 80s, now on Sundays from 8 to 10 p.m. on KWVA Eugene.